All right, so we are February 10th, 2020. We are up to Musar Day of Perek Yud Gimel. So there'll be a little bit of a halachic tint, but there is certainly a Musar aspect to it. So you'll see what I mean. I don't think you'll be disappointed, Bruce. Don't worry. So the Ramban, so there is, as you mentioned, a couple of really three subjects over the course of this Perek. Number one is the issue of the false prophet. Number two is the issue of the Mesis, the one who convinced others to do Avodah Zarah. And then we have the issue of the Ir Nidachas, the city that was completely destroyed because they were at least majority violators of Avodah Zarah. So we'll do a piece on the first, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the Ir Nidachas. So in the first section, it talks about the false prophet. So the Ramban makes a comment that the Pasuk tells us, V'inei lo tziva kosev shelo nishva l'misnavi Hashem Hashem l'avor Avodah Zarah klal, v'l'nabipa osus v'mosim shiasa, that the Pasuk is telling us that you shouldn't be looking at anything that he does. V'hiskir hatam, b'fnei shanachnu yadanu mi'etzias mitzrayim, z'hu ma'isa mamish, lo chizayin v'lo mara, ki l'ashem ha'aretz v'hu ha'machayish v'chafetz v'v'yachol. And what is our basis for this? What is our basis for the ability to reject the Navi Shaker? So says the Ramban, because we left Egypt. We left Egypt, we saw what happened when we left Egypt, and that was the real thing. And there's no way that we should be able to decipher and be able to tell that what this guy is doing is not the real thing. Right? And we heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu speak to us, punim and punim. So, and he told us to follow that I am Hashem, your God, and you're not going to follow any Avodah Zarah or anything like that. So then this guy comes along and says, oh, he changed his mind. Right? Anybody who really heard, who really spoke face to face with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so you would know that can't possibly be that this Navi is telling the truth. So what is the Ramban giving us here? The Ramban is saying, and he says, by the way, this is the pshat in the, if you look up the Ramban himself, the Ramban says, this is the pshat in the pasuk. This is what I think is the simplest explanation of this mitzvah. So what is the Ramban telling us? How are we going to know that this Navi Sheker is not telling us the truth? Is it a logical thing or is it a heart thing? Is it an emotional thing or logical thing? So the Ramban seems to be giving us the tools. He seems to be saying, give us the tools to be able to demonstrate intellectually that this can't be true. It can't be that's happening because we know the truth. And therefore, if we know the truth, then we'll be able to demonstrate how that whole thing was a fraud. And even if we're not able to demonstrate, we know in the back of our minds the whole thing is a fraud. It's like going to a David Copperfield show. So we know, even though you can't necessarily figure out how he pulled off that whatever illusion he was doing, we know that it's an illusion. In fact, he calls himself an illusionist, which is why we're more likely to say that it's permissible to go the David Copperfield show. There is an issue. There's a halachic issue about going to magic shows. But the one of the major heterim is that if he himself is telling you, he doesn't want you to think it's magic, right? David Copperfield wants you to think that he's not doing magic. What he is doing is an illusion, and you should be in awe of the fact that he's able to pull off those illusions. So that's what we would understand here as well, that this Navi Sheker could come with whatever proof he wants, whether it's about telling the future, as we discussed last week, whether it's about telling the future or about pulling off an amazing thing in front of us. But yet we know that it can't possibly be true. So this asks the Rav Henoch Leibowitz, he says, V'tema, v'arei kasa b'torah, the Pasuk then tells us though, ki minasa Hashem Elokeichem eschem, that what's the purpose of this? You'll know that the purpose of this is that Hashem is really testing you. L'das hayeshchem oavim es Hashem Elokeichem, to tell whether you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So while the Ramban is saying the simplest explanation is that this is like an intellectual exercise, that you have to keep in your mind that it can't be that this Navi Sheker is telling you the truth, the Pasuk seems to be telling us a different story. The Pasuk seems to tell us that the reason this is happening is to test whether you really love Hashem or not. To put that to the test. So which one is it? Is it to test your emotions or is it to test your intellect? And Rav Henoch suggests that it's really both, that both of them have to work together. That pure intellect without the avas Hashem, without the emotion that one has, so then your intellect is going to fail you. You'll be able, your mind will play tricks on you, or you'll allow your mind to play tricks on you, you'll allow yourself to be convinced, unless there is the avas Hashem that is going to motivate you to come up with the correct answer. And the same thing with the intellect, that just intellect alone, sorry, that just ava alone, is not going to be able to, it requires intellect as well. It requires a svara, it requires thoughts, it requires understanding, it requires hashkafa, it requires not just a belief in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but understanding of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And both of them work off of each other. The ava in enhances the intellect, and the intellect enhances the ava, enhances the emotion. And both of them work together, as one can see over the course of this pasuk. So in order to withstand the temptation of the Navi Sheker, so it is required to, you need both tools. One of the proofs that he brings here is from a pasuk from the Gemara that tells us with regards to the sota, the pasuk says, ish ki tishta ishto, and the Gemara tells us that in hamin nafin noafim, that people don't have these types of illicit relationships, achetichanis pehen ruach shtus, until they have ruach shtus, until they have some type of spirit of insanity, almost. So what does that tell us? That Yiras Shamayim is not simply enough in order to fight against these taivos. You need to remain strong. You need to have your mind remain strong as well. Both of them are working in tandem with one another. Okay, so that's one thought from the beginning of the parak. The what I want to talk about a little bit more is this issue, and this issue was raised with the when we went through it the first time. I think you asked a question about this. The issue of the Ir Nidachas. So the Ir Nidachas, so the pasuk, what does the pasuk say by the Ir Nidachas? Who gets killed? Who gets killed when it comes to the wayward city? So you're going to look into it via haketake es yoshve ha'ir ha'ilifichar. You're going to kill the people of that city. Hacharem osav yes kol sherba v'yes behamtal lifichar. You're going to gather everything or set aside everything that they have and the animals, and they're going to be destroyed according to the sword, and everything, all of the spoils you'll gather in the middle of the square, and you'll burn it all in the fire, and everything's going to be destroyed. V'aitat hel olam, it will be a mound, and you will no longer build on it. Right? So says Bruce. There you go. Everything is destroyed. So what is everything? So including, it sounds like, everything might be everything. So that is the sheet of the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Avodah Zarah, Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Dalid, Halacha Vav. He says, "Kishatifka miyad marvin lahem bati din." Right, once you've, it's been established like that, so then you have to set up a lot of bati dinim. Call me everybody who had two edim, see them do a avodah zarah. They're separated if they're found that the people who worship the avodah zarah are not so many people in the city, so they actually get stoned, and everybody else is saved. But if you find that the majority of the people were those that were doing a avodah zarah, so malin osam leveisin hagadol, so bring them up to the base in hagadol, v'gomrim sham dinam, and have the gmar din on the entire city, v'horgin kol elush avdu b'sayiv, and then we kill all those that served the avodah zarah with the sword. Okay, so it's only those that it served, not everybody. Okay, umakin es kol nefesh adam asher ba l'ficharev, and then we kill all the people that did this with the sword, taf v'nashim imuhilchu kula, and including women and children if they were all doing this. Why should women? Why is the chiddush? I would think women would be counted, right? Are women counted towards a percentage or not? I'm not sure what the story is there. V'nimsu ovdim ruba, and you find that it was only the majority of people that did it. Makin es kol hataf v'nashim shel ovdim l'ficharev. You kill all of the women and the children of those that served. So Rambam seems to be explicit that we seem to kill the children of those that served, which bothered Bruce. He was like, hey, wait a second, why should the children be killed? I thought children don't get punished for the sins of their parents. So that's a little bit unclear. We don't have a clear, that's actually somewhat of a sort of a debate. It's something that was changed back and forth. The Gemara towards the very end of Maseches Makos, so it gives four decrees, things that Moshe said and things that were changed. So one of them is, the third one is, Moshe Omer, Pokeid Avon Avos Albanim, that Hashem recalls the sins of the parents on the children. When do we lane that? That's a famous laning. When do we lane that? Pokeid Avon Avos Albanim, Pokeid, what is it again? It's part of the laning that we do on fast days. It's the aftermath of the sin of the Chet Egel. There's a Chesed to say, "Avon Fesh Chatam Enakei Lo Yenakei," that you'll be cleansed, but you won't be totally cleansed. Why? Pokei Avon Avos Albanim Avi Albanei Poked avon avos al banim val bnei banim al shlishim v'al ribayim. That will go on to the second, third, and fourth generation. That's what it says in the pasuk in Chumash, that there actually will be punishment for children because of the sins of their parents. So ba Yecheskel ubitla. So Yecheskel comes and he nullified the decree, and he says the nefesh achotis he samus, that the soul that sins, so it will die, as opposed to the child who's not going to die. That the pasuk actually continues on and says clearly that the child is not going to die as a result of the parents' sins. So that, does that mean that it's gone? Does that mean that, like, Moshe's idea of having children suffer because of the sins of the parent, that totally goes away? So I saw a piece, it sounds like that, from the Gemara. In fact, this is actually leads into the famous Gemara at the end of Makos with Rabbi Akiva and the other Rabbanim who went to see Yerushalayim. Right, that's also sort of an example of a navi, that a nevuah that was buttled, or that was contradicted. Right, that they said they saw the fox coming out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and they said, well, of course we're crying because there's a nevuah that says that when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the fox is going to be treading there. In fact, Rabbi Slifkin has a whole point. Makes a whole point. He says he doesn't think a fox is what they actually saw. He says, first, I think he says foxes aren't really in Eretz Yisrael. But he's, he thinks it's a coyote, right? Because foxes do, the whole idea is that it symbolizes that it's a desolate place. And it would be an animal that only goes to desolate places. Foxes, you see on my block sometimes, you see foxes, right? So he thinks that it's a coyote or something else in that family.
Probably have desert foxes, and I've been seeing desert foxes in Israel. I'm not sure. There are a species of fox
that
are called desert foxes.
Yeah. There was, I think this past year, or one of the past couple of years, there was a video of these foxes around the area surrounding Har Habayis, like during the 9 days. Like, people took this video and saw these foxes. They're like, oh, look at that, it's a sign. So I think that's what Nathan Slifkin wrote. He's like, yeah, it's very nice there are foxes there.
But I remember one night, I couldn't sleep very well at night. And I got up, I looked outside the window, and there's this coyote character looking thing, he's trotting down the street.
All right. So anyway, so remember, Rabbi Kiva responded by saying, "Yeah, but I have another nevuah, right? My nevuah indicates that if that's going to happen, then it's going to be rebuilt. So that's one thing leads to another. But the Gemara right before that seems to have this contradiction. So Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, the chief rabbi, I remember seeing. I have it in my notes, and I guess not sure where I saw it in his writings, but he made the interesting ha'ara that Moshe, they were speaking to different audiences. Right? Who was Moshe speaking to? Moshe was speaking to the Jewish people. Don't you sin because of the impact, right? The impact is going to be felt for generations to come. Right. Who's Yecheskel speaking to? Right? Who is Yecheskel speaking to? Yecheskel is speaking to the next generation. Yecheskel is speaking to the children. Right, and speaking to the children and telling the children, don't say, oh, we're suffering because of our parents. Right, so we should have the idea for ourselves that things that we do are going to be impactful for generations to come. But yet, when we think about our own actions, we can't say, oh, well, I'm just stuck in this way because of things that my parents did once upon a time. Okay, but anyways, so there's this. It's not so clear that it is a thing that children will not die on behalf of their parents. It could just be that that's the answer. The answer is that the Erni Dachas requires that children get killed. Why would that particularly be? So the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, actually points out that the idea of generations dying is only used in reference to Avodah Zarah. That this idea would only, when it said that God is visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon them, this is in part one, Perek Nun Dalet. He says, when it says that God is visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, this refers exclusively to the sin of idolatry and to no other sin. That this is the case may be inferred from what is said in the Ten Commandments, it says itself about the third and fourth generations, none except idolaters being called enemy. It only makes that reference when it's talking about Avodah Zarah. So even if we say that the punishment is being imposed by children, or perhaps it's only by the Rambam who says that the punishment goes to children, he might only say it by Avodah Zarah, and that's what Erni Dach is all about. It's all about Avodah Zarah. So there is this is actually subject to a bit of a machlokas. This is there is a comment. The Yad Ramah, the Ramah is the Moshe Abulafia. He was the Rav in Toledo. Not Toledo is in Ohio. Toledo is in Spain, right? I believe he was after Rabbeinu Yonah and before the Rush. Pretty sure. He also played a role in the whole Rambam issue of whether Rambam banned or not banned. I think he was one of the people that brought him back. I don't forget the story there. But he, in the back, Yad Ramah wrote a commentary on a couple of Masechtos, one of them being, most prominently being Sanhedrin, mostly because Sanhedrin doesn't really have that many commentaries on it. So when you learn, there's no Ritva, there's no Rashi, the classic Rishon that you have in other Masechtos don't exist on you on Sanhedrin. So when you learn Sanhedrin in Yeshiva, so you need to have the Ramah to help you along. So in the back of the Igra, of the Yad Ramah on Sanhedrin, so there are a couple of letters that he has, mostly dealing with things that came up over the course of Masechta Sanhedrin, and one of them has to do with regards to the Ir Nidachas. And there, the person is asking, where does this idea come from that the children are actually killed? I mean, it's not explicit. We just saw the pasuk. It doesn't say the children get killed. It just says all that they have gets killed. So is that going to include children? And the Gemara is not explicit about it either. The Gemara never says explicitly that the children get killed. So the Kesef Mishnah is Rav Yosef Karo, writes his commentary on the Rambam. So he finds some hints that where the Rambam might have gotten this idea from. There's a Medrash that seems to say it, so therefore he got that idea. But the Rama says he thinks it's not true. And now he thinks children don't get killed, and he adds in, and this is the line that is that makes one pause a little bit. He says, "V'sudah ka'amar makanes kol hataf." The Rambam who says that you kill all the children, "V'chalila lakel me rasha v'chihechan matzinu katan chayev shezeh chayev." He raises Bruce's question. He says, "Chas v'shalom that we would say the children get killed. Where do we find that the children get killed? And therefore, I'm going to assume that they don't." So it's a very interesting formulation that the Ramah brings, because what is his argument? His argument is, well, first of all, we never find explicitly that they are, but you can make a case that they, I mean, you could read it one way or the other, but what pushes the Ramah to say that they don't get killed? Okay, but we have a lot, you know, there's a lot of sveikos in halacha, sort of questions in halacha what it means, and by din d'oraisa we would go l'chumrah, we would go stringently. What pushed them to say that we don't? It's almost like a moral argument that the Ramah brings. Right? He said, how can you say that? Right? It doesn't say it explicitly, so why would you, b'safek, put them in? We should look for any reason to take them out. So this machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramah, it plays a role in the debate, the morality. Is there like a morality outside of halacha debate, right? Do we use morality to our understanding of morality in order to impact our perspective on the halacha? So Rabbi Norman Lamb has an article about this in one of the Orthodox Forum journals, about the destruction of the Shiva Amimim, where he makes an important distinction. Because when I heard this the first time, this machlokas Rambam and Ramah, the person giving the talk said, you see, there's a morality outside of the Torah. So Rabbi Lam makes the argument, says, no, you can't just say anything is morality. You can't just say, because the New York Times editorial board decided that something is moral, so therefore that's going to impact our hashkafa. Morality, quote unquote morality, would guide halakha only if the morality is an internal morality. I mean, going around killing killing the children of an Ir Nidachas. Why is that abhorrent? Why is that like problematic to us? So is it problematic to us because what will the New York Times say about going around and killing all the children of Ir Nidachas? Or is it abhorrent to us because we have an Isser in the Torah called Lo Sirtzach, right? We have a prohibition of not killing, and the idea that we're just going to go around killing seems to fly in the face of that. So those questions, I mean sometimes these, you know, the killing of Amalek and the killing of the seven nations, those kinds of issues raise issues for us, but just and they require answers and important approaches. But in terms of our framing of the question, it's important, I think, to frame it as not, it goes against Western morality, but rather it seems to go against an attitude that the Torah instills within us. And how do you work that out? Right? It's an inherent question as opposed to a external question. Yeah?
Yeah, you can cite the Akedah.
even can cite the Akedah itself. Okay, right, right. The reason why we have a question about the Akedah is not, how could Avram do it? It's, doesn't Avram seem to be in violation of one of the Shem Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, right? Or
Hashem didn't want him to do it at the end.
At the end he didn't, okay, fine. But with these mitzvahs he did. I mean, we see that Shaul got in trouble for not killing Ov HaMelech, for allowing his own morality to be able to take over. Yeah. One more piece I forgot to bring the Gemara in, but there is that pasuk that we quoted about the Ir Nidachas. So at the very end, what does it say? By Salachem Tel Olam, where is it? He says in pasuk Tes Zayin, by Salachem. No, a pasuk Yud Zayin. Vaisat Tel Olam. It will be this heap. Lo Tivna Od. It's never going to be rebuilt again. So there is a Mishnah at the end of Sanhedrin. These Gemaras appear at the end of Sanhedrin. So there is a Mishnah there that says that it will be always destroyed, meaning it will never be allowed to be rebuilt. Right? It has to just be left as a heap, as a reminder for everybody that that's what happens to a city that's near Nidachas. So Rabbi Akiva comes along and argues and says, no. It has to be a mound. You can't build it anymore as a city. Aval Pardesim, he says, you could turn it into Ganus v'Pardesim. You could turn it into gardens and orchards. I mean, it can never be rebuilt as a city, but it could be used for other things that are going to be of beneficial nature to society. I mean, and that will be a reminder. It'll still be a reminder. You're not allowed to build there, but it doesn't have to lay waste. It could be used for other things. This perhaps is indicative of Rabbi Akiva's attitude toward tshuva, and perhaps our general attitude towards tshuva, that we don't just destroy the past, but rather we build off the past. And even though there might be things that a person might not be happy about, or the things that he did in his past, so one way is to try to erase it. So that's what we call tshuva miyira. That's what we call tshuva out of fear. But what's tshuva mi'ava, tshuva out of love, is to try to take those things from the past and try to use them as as motivation, B, perhaps teaching points and things like that, and to be able to use them to benefit ourselves and others for the future. So, at the time, we'll stop here. Have a good day.